This is the Poetry Foundation's Essential American Poets podcast. Essential American Poets is an online audio poetry collection. The poets included in the collection were selected in 2006 by Donald Hall when he was poet laureate. Recordings of the poets he selected are available online at poetryfoundation.org and poetryarchive.org. In this edition of the podcast, we'll hear poems by Marilyn Hacker. Marilyn Hacker is a New Yorker, born in 1942 in the Bronx to Jewish parents who were the first in their families to go to university. Hacker was a precocious student, beginning her studies at New York University when she was only 15. She married science fiction writer Samuel R. Delaney in 1961 and worked much of the next two decades as a commercial editor and book dealer. After moving to London in 1970, she first found an audience through British publications such as the London Magazine. A career breakthrough came when Hacker was published in the New American Review by editor Richard Howard. Marilyn Hacker is known for her radical formalism, the combination of traditional forms, such as the villanelle and sestina, with a tone and subject matter that are personal, vernacular, and sometimes racy. A lesbian, Hacker has made the lives and experience of women central concerns. Her 1986 narrative sonnet sequence chronicles the love story of an older poet and younger woman. Her somber collection, Winter Numbers, records her own struggle with breast cancer and the deaths of close friends from AIDS. Hacker has been an influential editor of various publications, including the Kenyon Review. The recipient of many awards, Hacker directs the MFA writing program at the City College of New York. The following poems were recorded in 2007.
This is called Morning News, and it was written just about the time of the American preemptive invasion of Iraq. Spring wafts up the smell of bus exhaust, of bread and fried potatoes, tips green on the branches, repeats old news, arrogance, ignorance, war. A cinder block wall shared by two houses is new rubble. On one side was a kitchen sink and a cupboard. On the other was a bed, a bookshelf, three framed photographs. Glass is shattered around the photographs. Two half circles of hardened pocket bread sit on the cupboard. There, provisionally, was shelter, a plastic truck under the branches of a fig tree. A knife flashed in the kitchen, merely dicing garlic. Engines of war move inexorably toward certain houses, while citizens sit safe in other houses, reading the newspaper, whose photographs make sanitized excuses for the war. There are innumerable kinds of bread, brought up from bakeries, baked in the kitchen. The date, the latitude, tell which one was dropped by a child beneath the bloodied branches. The uncontrolled and multifurcate branches of possibility infiltrate houses, walls, window frames, ceilings. Where there was a tower, a town, ash and burnt wires, a graph on a distant computer screen. Elsewhere, a kitchen table setting gapes where children, bred to branch into new lives, were culled for war. Who wore this starched, smocked cotton dress? Who wore this jersey blazoned for the local branch of the district soccer team? Who left this black bread and this flat gold bread in their abandoned houses? Whose father begged for mercy in the kitchen? Whose memory will frame the photograph and use the memory for what it was never meant for by this girl, that old man, who was caught on a ball field near a window, war exhorted through the grief a photograph revives? Or was the team a covert branch of a banned group? Were maps drawn in the kitchen, a bomb thrust in a hollowed loaf of bread? What did the old men pray for in their houses of prayer? The teachers teach in schoolhouses between blackouts and blasts when each word was flensed by new censure, books exchanged for bread, both hostage to the happenstance of war. Sometimes the only schoolroom is a kitchen. Outside the window, black strokes on a graph of broken glass, birds line up on bare branches. This letter curves. This one spreads its branches like friends holding hands outside their houses. Was the lesson stopped by gunfire? Was there panic, silence? Does a torn photograph still gather children in the teacher's kitchen? Are they there, meticulously learning wartime lessons with the signs for house, book, bread? Elegy for a Soldier. The city where I knew you was swift. A lover cabbed to Brooklyn, broke but so what, after the night shift in a Second Avenue diner. The lover was a Quaker, a poet, an anti-war activist, was blonde, was 24. Wet snow fell on the access road to the Manhattan Bridge. I was neither lover, slept uptown. But the arteries, streetlights, headlines, phone lines, feminine plural links ran silver through the night city as dawn and the yellow cab passed on the frost-blurred bridge, headed for that day's last or first coffee. The city where I knew you was rich in bookshops, potlucks, ad hoc debates, demos, parades, and picnics. There were walks I liked to take. I was on good terms with two rivers. You turned, burned, flame wheel of words, lighting the page, good neighbor on your homely street and park slope, whose Russian Zetas, Jamaican grocers, dyke vegetarians, young, gifted, everyone claimed some changes. At least a new food co-op. In the laundromat, ordinary women talked revolution. We knew we wouldn't live forever, but it seemed as if we could. The city where I knew you was yours and mine by birthright, Harlem, the Bronx. Separately, we left it and came separately back. There's no afterlife for dialogue, divergences we never teased apart to weave back together. Death slams down in the midst of all your unfinished conversations. Whom do I address when I address you, larger than life as you always were, not alive now? Words are not you, poems are not you, ashes on the Pacific tide, you least of all. I talk to myself to keep the lines open. The city where I knew you is gone. Pink icing roses spelled out passion on a book-shaped chocolate cake. The bookshop's a sushi bar now, and passion is long out of print. Would you know the changed street that cab swerved down toward you through cold white mist? We have a Republican mayor. Threats keep citizens in line. Anthrax, suicide attacks. A scar festers where towers once were. Dissent festers unexpressed. You are dead of a woman's disease. Who gets to choose what battle takes her down? Down to the ocean, friends mourn you with no time to mourn. 2. You, who stood alone in the tall bay window of a Brooklyn brownstone, conjuring mourning with free-flying words, knew the power, terror in words, in flying. Knew the high of solitude while the early light prowled Seventh Avenue, lupine, hungry like you, your spoils, raisins and almonds, ballpoint pen, yellow fool's cap. You who stood alone in your courage, never hesitant to underline the connections between rape, exclusion and occupation, and separations. Were alone and were not alone when morning blotted the last spark of you out, around you, voices you no longer had voice to answer, eyes you were blind to. All your loves were singular. You scorned labels, claimed black, woman, and for the rest eluded limits, quicksilver, Caribbean, staked out self-definitions. Now, your death as if it were yours, your house, your dog, your friends, your serial lovers. Death's not yours. What's yours are 1,000 poems alive on paper. You, at once an optimist, a Cassandra, Lilith in the wilderness of her lyric, were a black American born in Harlem, citizen soldier. If you had to die, and I don't admit it, who dared? What if each time they kill a black man, we kill a cop? Couldn't you take down with you a few prime villains in the Capitol who are also mortal? June, you should be living. The states are bleeding. Leaden words like homeland translate abandoned dissident discourse. 20 years ago, you denounced the war crimes still in progress now as Jenin, Ramallah, dominate, then disappear from the headlines. Palestine, your war. To each nation, it's Jews, wrote Primo Levi. Palestinians are Jews to Israelis. Afterwards, he died in despair, or so we infer, despairing. To each nation, it's Jews, it's blacks, it's Arabs, Palestinians, immigrants, it's women. From each nation, it's poets, Mahmoud Darwish, Kavanaugh, Shahid, who, beloved witness for silenced Kashmir, cautioned, shift the accent, and he was martyr. Audre Lorde, Neruda, Amichai, Senghor, and you, June Jordan. The Old Reliable is a bar that was then on East 3rd Street between Avenue B and C. And it's a bar that I frequented with various friends at that time. And this is a poem that was written some 20 years later. I suppose I don't have to underline that the poem written 20 years later looks forward to the AIDS epidemic and the ravages it wrought on so many communities. And it's dedicated to Lewis Ellingham, who now lives in San Francisco. And it has an epigraph from James Fenton's poem in a notebook, The Laughing Soldiers Fought to Their Defeat. Nights of 1964 to 1966, The Old Reliable. White decorators interested in art, black file clerks with theatrical ambitions, kids making pharmaceutical revisions in journals comp instructors urged they start. The part Cherokee teenage genius, maybe. The secretary who hung out with fairies. The copywriter wanting to know, where is my husband? The soprano with the baby. All drank draft beer or lethal sweet Manhattans or improvised concoctions with tequila. In summer, when from 3rd Street we could feel a night breeze waft in, whose fragrances were Latin. The place was run by Polish refugees, squat Margie, gaunt Speedy, whose sobriquet transliterated what? He'd brought his play from Lodz. After a while, we guessed Margie's illiteracy was why he cashed checks and she perched near the threshold to bar prose, the underage, the fugitive, and those arrayed impertinently to their sex. The bar was talk and cruising. In the back room, we danced, smoke Martha and the Vandellas, Smokey and the Miracles, while sellers and buyers changed crisp tens for smoke and smack. Some came in after work, some after supper, plumage replenished to meet who knew who. Behind the bar, Margie dished up beef stew. On weeknights, you could always find an upper to speed you to your desk and drink till 4. Loosened by booze, we drifted on the ripples of Motown, home in new couples or triples. We're back at dusk with IDs at the door. Bill was my roommate. Russell drank with me, although they were a dozen years my seniors. I walked off with the 18-year-old genius, an older woman, not quite 23. Link was new as Rambo and better-looking, North Beach Bar Paidan of doomed Jack Spicer, like Russell, our two-meter artificer, a corvo whose ecclesia was cooking. Bill and Russell were painters. Bill had been a monk in Kyoto. Stoned, we sketched together, till he discovered paupers and black leather, and Zen consented to new discipline. We shared my Sixth Street flat with a morose cat, an arch cat, and pot plants we pruned daily. His boyfriend had left him for an Israeli dancer. My husband was on Mykonos. Russell loved Harold, who was black and bad, and lavished on him dinners meant for men, like Escoffier and Brias Savarin. Staunch blonde Dora made rice. When she had tucked in the twins, six flights of tenement stairs they'd descend, 11-ish, and stroll down Third Street, desultory night patrol gone mauve and green under the virulent streetlights to the bar, where Bill and I, if we'd not come to dinner, Link and Lou and Betty had already had a few. One sweat-soaked night in pitiless July, wedged on booth benches of cracked naugahyde, we planned a literary magazine where North Beach met the Lower East Side scene. We could have titled it When Worlds Collide. Dora was gone, in case the children wake up. Link lightly had decamped with someone else, the German engineer, or was he Bill's? Russell's stooped wale brushed my absent makeup. Armed children spared us home, our goodnight hugs laissez-passer. We railed against the war. Soon, some of us bust south with Snick and Core. Soon, some of us got busted dealing drugs. The file clerks took exams and forged ahead. The decorators' kitchens blazed persimmon. The secretary started kissing women, and so did I, and my three friends are dead. Muriel Rukeyser had a severe stroke fairly early in her life, which is to say in her 50s, and taught herself again to walk, to write, to talk, and wrote about that. There's a wonderful poem of hers called The Resurrection of the Right Side. Crepuscule with Muriel. Instead of a cup of tea, instead of a milk-silk whelk of a cup of nearly 6 o'clock tea time, cup of a stumbling block, cup of an afternoon unredeemed by talk, cup of a cut brown loaf, of a slice, a lack of butter, blueberry jam that's almost black. Instead of tannin seeping into the cracks of a pot, the void of an hour seeps out, infects the slit of a cut I haven't the wit to fix with a surgeon's needle threaded with fine-gauge silk, as a key would thread the cylinder of a lock. But no key threads the cylinder of the lock. Late afternoon light, transitory, licks the place of the absent cup with its rough tongue, flicks itself out beneath the wheel's revolving spoke. Taut thoughts gone, with a blink of attention, slack, a vision of death and distance in the mix. She lost her words, and how did she get them back when the corridor of a day was a lurching deck? The dream life, logic and codes in nervous ticks, she translated to a syntax which connects intense and unfashionable politics with morning coffee, Hudson sunsets, sex, then the short circuit of the final stroke, the end toward which all lines looped out, then broke. What a gaze out the window interjects. On the southeast corner, a black lab box, tugged as the light clicks green toward a late-day walk by a plump brown girl in a purple anorak. The Bronx-bound local comes rumbling up the tracks out of the tunnel over West Harlem blocks, whose windows gleam on the animal warmth of bricks, rouged by the fluvial light of 6 o'clock.
That was Marilyn Hacker, recorded in 2007. You've been listening to the Essential American Poets podcast, produced by the Poetry Foundation in collaboration with poetryarchive.org. To learn more about Marilyn Hacker and other Essential American Poets, and to hear more poetry, go to poetryfoundation.org.